Three, two, one.
Here we go. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome everybody to episode 142 of the No Normal Show, brought to you by Revive. This is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust, in the dirt, in the ground, in the weeds. We leave it behind. That's so we can celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the future, the tomorrow, the forward, other words for that, all related to how brands can lead the way in health. I'm your co-host, Chris Bevelo, Chief Brand Officer at Revive, joined as always by our co-host, Stephanie Weirwell, who is SVP of Integrated Marketing at Revive. Hello again, Stephanie.
Hello again.
Chase Kleckner, co-host, shows producer, senior marketing manager. All of those things are true. Hello again, Chase.
Hello, hello. So excited for today.
Yes, this will be a fun one. We have so many fun things to talk about. First, we're going to start with some news relative to the Super Bowl, relative to an ad we talked about from Coinbase, relative to our field, which is advertising, and that is the controversy that has sparked based on a tweet from the CEO of Coinbase, who claimed that his company had come up with the ad and with an exclamation point on his message saying no ad agency could have come up with this ad, which as you can imagine, sparked some controversy, not the least of which was the idea originally came from an ad agency. So this is kind of a little bit like the Peloton Sex in the City deal, where every minute something new is happening. So by the time this comes out, something may have been updated, but that's kind of the setup. We have a point of view on this, as you can imagine. Stephanie, I don't know if you want to start with our point of view, kind of how we think about this.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, of course, clearly we work in an agency and we have many clients who are client side. And so I think what we see as really important here is collaboration. Like, I don't want to go singing Kumbaya, but ideas are better when everyone collaborates and when great ideas can come from anywhere. They can come from the client side. They can come from the agency side. They can come from vendors and other partners. They can come from consumers, right? Like, so I think what we've just been chatting about is when things work really, really well is when everyone can be in a room together. And the Coinbase CEO did call out. He said, hey, we had seamless integration now. He called that out a little bit too late. But we just wanted to, you know, discuss how we shouldn't be taking sides here, ad agencies or client side or otherwise, but, it works really well when everyone works together.
It's like a perfect marriage.
It is a perfect
the
marriage.
The ideal marriage where you respect who, it doesn't matter who has the better idea or the more creative idea. You celebrate that, you encourage those things, you know, that's what a good partnership can look like.
Yeah. So the CEO of Coinbase basically came out with the equivalent of, look, we all know it's the husbands who are their most important part of a marriage, which is ridiculous, but it's also ridiculous to come out on the other side and say, no, it's not the husbands, it's the wives. Right. So that would be agencies saying, well, you don't understand that we are the idea generators. It's all about us. The clients just follow our lead. Like, that's just as ridiculous, which is Stephanie's point, I think. And it's, you know, the controversy continues. Now there's backlash to the backlash, and our sister agency, so part of our holding company, IPG, the Martin agency, the CEO of the Martin agency, which her name is, does somebody have her name?
Kristen Cavallo.
Yes. She came out and she actually responded and said, you know, unfortunately, your post is mistaken because the idea came from our agency, came from an ad agency. So she's getting lauded for standing up for ad agencies and then also now taking heat because, you know, sounds defensive for the agency to say this and blah, 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 blah. So our take on this is Stephanie said it. It's both of us together. That is our view. Yeah.
And I think it's great that she came out and pointed that out, because it's really important for credit to go to those who have the great ideas, for sure. But and this may be a little controversial to even say. I know that, you know, in some teams maybe not agree with this, but I've seen just wonderful examples where clients and agencies are in the room together brainstorming. You know, maybe that's not part of the creative concepting process, but maybe it's part of how does it come to life, or maybe it's part of workshopping or whatever. I mean, those work sessions can be so fruitful, and I think they work really well, again, when there's not territorialism. And that goes for agencies too, not just client side. And those are the best kinds of work. We were just chatting and kind of sharing internally the best kinds of work that we've worked on, and often it is when there is that that sharing.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is just all driven by a CEO that doesn't think twice about what he's saying publicly. Like, you know, if you honestly think no ad agency could come up with that ad, why are you working with ad agencies at all? Because it's a great ad, but to say that like no agency could come up with that is just so far off. So anyway, we'll put that to rest, but we just thought we should say our point. Okay. So today we're going to focus on the Copernican consumer. As you know, we have a new book out called Joe Public 2030. It looks at 5 predictions for how consumers will engage healthcare over the next decade. The first prediction, and the one we're focused on right now, that we talk about all of them here and there, is the Copernican consumer, which is the idea that as we move forward over the next decade, everything will start revolving around us as individuals. So our care, our health, this will be enabled by data, by technology. It's all going to be brought to us in the ways that we want, including services and including care itself. So moving out of the hospital into retail, into in the home and virtual and all that. It's all going to surround us. Like Copernicus said, the sun will be the center of the universe, which is not true. Turned out to be wrong, but we love the irony of that. So today we're going to talk about how to think about that and how to apply that to our field. So if that is true and we move toward that Copernican consumer, what does that mean for those of us in healthcare marketing? So we're going to talk there. But we thought it would be fun, we'll see if it is, to play, I don't know if it's called the popcorn game. It's a great drinking game, I'm just going to say that. So basically the game works where you pick any kind of subject. So you say like Leonardo DiCaprio movies, and whoever's in the room, you go around in a circle and everybody names one until somebody can't name a new one. You can't repeat. And that person has to drink. At least this is how I learned the game. Maybe maybe there's other ways to play.
Maybe there's a PG version of
there could be a PG version of that game. But so we're not going to be drinking today, but we're going to play that game with health data. We're going to play the popcorn game super fast. We don't spend a ton of time on it. But what we wanted to do is see how many types of health data we can name that are available to us right now in our lives. And so we're each going to think about this from our personal lives, and we're going to go in order, play the popcorn game or whatever it's called. We'll start with Stephanie, then go to Chase, then go to me, and just keep going around and around until somebody can't come up with one. And we're going to go super lightning quick. You have 5 seconds to come up with one. So if you have a brain freeze, game ends. Are we ready? And you can't repeat. Even if Chase says something and I also have it, it's off the table.
Let's go.
You ready?
Let's do this.
All right, Stephanie's going ready. First. Begin.
Okay.
Go.
Okay, my Oura ring.
Ooh, the Peloton.
My glucose sensor.
My Tonal.
Ooh, the toilet that you talked about, Stephanie. That was at CES.
Nice. My credit cards. To have my health expenditures on them.
Oh.
My screen time tracker.
Oh. Has anyone said Apple Watch?
Nope.
Nope.
Boom.
My EMR, my medical health record.
23andMe.
My Teladoc visits.
Nice. My insurance health record.
My Withings scale.
Your what?
Withings, like a smart scale.
Smart scale, good.
Sleep numbers mattress that supposedly to help to sleep apnea and insomnia.
That's great. My CPAP machine.
Mm.
I'm older. Amazon. I'm going to have more.
My Amazon Halo band.
Oh.
Three. Two.
Oh, the light bulb. The light bulb that I'm not a big fan of. The CES light bulb.
Get it right. My at-home, this is true, I have one, my at-home blood pressure monitor.
Oh, nice.
I get diagnostic testings a lot by LabCorp/Walgreens/CVS.
Have you guys said the Amazon Halo band?
Yes, I have. Oh, yes.
No. You three, said that?
Yes.
Three, two.
No, oh, that's it. I'm out.
There we go. Okay, Chase is out. Good. I don't know how many we got there. Yeah. Maybe 20 or
Chase,
so.
I think you were calling out a lot of things that, well, I would love to have.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes, they're all real though. Those are all real things.
They're all real.
They're real. Good. I was getting scared there. I had a couple more, but I was running out.
Okay. I saved you guys. You're welcome.
You're welcome. Yes, thank you. Okay, so with that as our setup, and as we think about all of those things being brought to us in some way that is centralized, that is at our fingertips, that is used to help us live healthier lives and support the care that we get when we need clinical care from a doctor or hospital or whatever, let's talk about what we need to do with this. You know, if you are trying to support or build or change a health brand, if you are trying to market to consumers, and let's not talk about it necessarily from the angle of those who might make the Peloton or the Libre disc, like not selling the product itself, but how could an organization show up to support consumers with all that data available. Does that make sense? So you can think about a hospital or health system and maybe we'll focus more on that. So Stephanie, you've got a blog post that we're putting up. Chase, is that up?
It's going, by the time this podcast is live, the blog post will be live.
Nice. So we'll provide a link in the show notes to that where Stephanie's taking this on and come up with some ways to think about it. So Stephanie, let's give you the microphone to at least start with and set up kind of how you thought about this, and we'll get into three ways that folks could think about supporting the Copernican consumer.
Yeah, sure. So I think I'm very inspired by this prediction from the Joe Public 2030 book. And the reason is because I'm a total health sensor nerd. You can probably tell by some of our recent podcast episodes. So I did recently get an Oura Ring. I also have an Apple Watch. I have an Amazon Halo band. I have a smart scale. I'm always browsing for what's the next thing I can get. So I'm very interested because Chris has kind of inspired me to look at continuous glucose monitors, very interested in food sensitivity tests, all the things. And so this trend is very exciting to me because it predicts that we will one day live in a world where we can, because of blockchain and because of other technologies and because of all the sensors that are coming, you know, forth in the future, connect all of those things and be able to have a much clearer, better sense of our health and be able to be a lot more DIY when it comes to health, which is already happening in terms of consumer culture, as the journal pointed out a few days ago. So I think that's very exciting. And when I think about the health sensor space, we're at the very, very beginning, right? Like, what can we track today? It's largely heart rate, breath, respiration rate. It's those kinds of things, sort of the typical vitals. It's blood pressure. It's blood sugar. But what we're not able to track is some of the things that require more extensive diagnostic testing or, you know, other types of vitals. And I'm really excited to see what that will bring as we have more and more health sensors and more advancements in the space where we can actually get more predictions and we can start to manage our own health / work with, you know, AI models and recommendations in order to help us live healthier and make lifestyle changes, which is very different than today where you have to drive to the doctor, have a conversation, and often not have enough time to review all of your lifestyle. So that's kind of my little gist of what I think is exciting about this.
Yeah, and I think we talk about this in the book, but what I think will be a watershed moment is when you as the consumer start to have the ability to view, activate, contribute to the collection of all these things holistically, and that they are treated and thought of and acted on holistically, right? So all the things we just popcorned, they're almost all of them individual sources of data that somebody has to manually pull together and consider. Now there are versions of the things we're talked about, Stephanie, some of the things that you've mentioned for sure, where there's a collection of some of it together, right? But to be able to have all of this in one place, and not just in one place with 100 things to look at, if you think of like a dashboard, but how do those things relate to each other? And if you're going to do something like right before we got on this podcast, well, I used my sensor because I could tell I was going low blood sugar. So now I got a bowl of jelly beans, if you could see, because I haven't eaten lunch yet, right? So, but that's a singular source. Are there other things that are important for me to understand related to that, that might have helped prevent me from going low blood sugar, right? They have nothing to do with my glucose, but maybe they had to do with the exercise I did this morning or what I ate. Like, all that's there, but somehow how it's pulled together and comprehended holistically will be a watershed moment.
And even, I mean, just a simple example of your glucose monitoring, like, it would have been amazing if you didn't even have to check it, right? If it gave you a notification of like, hey, you're starting to go downhill, like, let's figure out how to, but it still relies on you to be the one to check that. So in a world where it's constantly tracking and monitoring what's going on, what the metrics are, sending you suggestions on what you can do or should do, I mean, that's going to be really, really sweet.
And then if your Amazon robot, I think the name is Astro, I believe. And then if Astro brought you those jelly beans.
Yes, yes.
And now I'm really dreaming.
I had to rely on the Mother Nature app because I could tell. I was like, uh-oh, something's off. I know the signs of it. But it's still, I said this when we were prepping for the show, all of the things we're dreaming about are amazing. But just the fact that I can hold up my phone and tell my blood sugar like that, instead of having to go run and prick my finger, that's a completely different lifestyle when you have that capability. And it's just the start. I think that's what we're talking about. So we're all excited about this, and we go super in depth in the book about all of this. So definitely pick up the book. But let's talk a little bit about, if you're in our field, what are we going to do about this? How do we prepare for this? How do we leverage it to help our health brands? Stephanie, you want to give us some tips?
Yes. Well, just to sum up, one of the headlines of this prediction is that we will one day move from this Internet of Things world to an Internet of Health world, where all of this health data is connected. And so it brings up, first of all, a lot of questions for no matter what type of health brand you're in, which is, what does this mean for the future of providers? Will AI replace doctors? I think the answer is no, certainly not in the short term, not even by 2030. But there certainly may be augmentations made in terms of recommendations on an ongoing basis for patients. So it just brings up a lot of questions about especially primary care. What does this mean for primary care? Will we need less primary care providers? So I think a few things to just consider to start doing today or yesterday is, number one, for health brands and specifically the marketing teams within health brands to be that voice of the consumer, to really be tracking what are consumers' desires for the experience, for the overall experience, because of course, we've talked about before, convenience is really critical, but now people are more interested and more useful in kind of very simple, simplified, easy to understand recommendations, and they're used to or getting used to these kinds of experiences that we're talking about. So what does that mean for your organization? How can you rethink what you're doing? Number two is to advocate for data ownership. So I think it's been said by multiple people, but whoever owns the data in the future kind of owns that future. And that is very true in this cookieless world we're in, but especially in a world where health data will be more and more collected. So how are you thinking about your data ownership, partnerships that you're creating, partnerships with these kinds of sources?
Wait, I want to dive into this one more. Can we dive into this one more?
Yes, please. Let's do it.
Because we have a lot we could talk about this. And we can go back to the first one too. But this one, we in the book, and when I present on this particular prediction, one of the things that we came up with when, so Stephanie was part of the team that helped come up with all of the ideas and the content behind the predictions, our team 2030. So I remember back then, this kind of hit us. And it was the idea that what we're talking about here is already starting to happen in the financial world. And so the example that I give is, and this is in terms of advocating for data ownership. So keep that in mind, right? So I had a financial planner forever, 10 years. A lot of people have financial planners. She was from Ameriprise. I would meet with her twice a year. We would talk about our retirement planning and all that kind of stuff. But over time, I was like, I need more than the 2 hours I get a year. Also, it was very expensive. So I researched alternatives and came across a whole new field of offerings I didn't even know existed, which are basically online financial management platforms. So the one I'm using, actually use two, but the main one I use is Betterment. But there are others. Wealthfront is one. A lot like Charles Schwab has these. And basically what it is it's an online place where I get to set what I want my retirement investments to be. I'm not a day trader, so I'm not having to like actively trade. It's just index funds go. I have expertise on financial management at my fingertips if I want for anything. And it allows me to pull in data from all my other financial resources. So my banking accounts, my wife's investments, my 401k, which is through my company. It's all pulled forth into one place, just like we talked about 10 minutes ago, right? Where I can manage it, I can see it. My experts that are on hand can see it. And so this is a little bit of what we're talking about could happen in healthcare, where not only does all of the data come together in one place, but using AI, using scale in terms of clinical support, it may replace what I need in a primary care physician. And so remember where we started this, which is advocating for data ownership. If you are a hospital or health system, you want to be the people providing this platform. And when we were talking about this, we joked a little bit, like, it's Betterment, it's Wealthfront. Like, who would have been the perfect company to launch this? It would have been, for me, Wells Fargo. I have 12 accounts with Wells Fargo. Like, I have, like, kid accounts. I have kid savings accounts. I have shared accounts. It's ridiculous, right? And I created all those, and I've gotten in trouble in the past for creating those for consumers. I want all those. That would have been the place to do it. But Stephanie, like we talked about, Wells Fargo is like a legacy financial institution, a little slow on the uptake.
Yes, and I can only imagine the kinds of conversations that might have occurred. Why would we bring in Bank of America data? Why would we connect American Express data, right? Those are competitors. We want people to use more of our products. So instead, we're going to market them more of our products. So anyway, I can completely understand that type of thinking. But it just follows how in even solutions like Venmo and PayPal and Mint.com and all of those have been around for a while, and only in the last, 3, 4, 5 years have banking institutions started to create their own types of products, and they were just too late. So we don't want that to happen in the healthcare space.
No, the type of organization that would be best positioned to do this if they could would be a health system who, if they have a patient, particularly a primary care patient as part of their relationship, has more intel at depth on health than any other organization. Like, not my refrigerator, not Peloton, not Apple Watch, though Apple Watch is close. It is, you know, for me in particular, all of the health data that exists with my health system in my EMR. That's where it should start. Are they going to be able to beat Amazon or Apple or Walmart or anybody to that is another question.
Yeah. And go ahead, Chase.
No, you got it. You're good.
It just, again, it raises a million questions, and we're very aware of that, like clinical accuracy, data interoperability, all of those things that feel like huge, huge hurdles, and they certainly are. But I think, again, looking at it from the consumer lens, which is kind of implication number one, which is how are you being the voice of the consumer in the organization? From the consumer standpoint, data about how I slept last night may be as important to me or more as my cholesterol levels. From a physician standpoint, it may not feel as important, but we have to kind of marry what the consumer wants in addition with what our physicians need to look at. And I think that's going to be a very challenging and politically driven conversation.
Yeah, which then will probably lead to delays and just waiting on the right time to make those calls or decisions, and may lead to, hey, we created something too late when it comes to a health system. I also think this gets into the part where, Chris, in the book you talk about, or I believe maybe it was Russ Myers from CVS Health, talks about culture and knowledge, where I think where systems may have a hard time compared to, let's just say, a Fitbit or an Apple, they have the capability from a, I would say, tech stack, you know, the knowledge there, the roles in place to create something like that, to bring it in, and kind of have that culture to go with it. So that will be an interesting thing, because I don't think a ton of that, I mean, there's definitely systems that are very elaborate when it comes to their technology, but I would say those are a rarity in most instances.
That goes to, let's talk about the third one, because I want to pick that back up. Stephanie, we'll give you a chance to kind of articulate the third one, because I think there's an example I can give that talks to your third one, but also reinforces what Chase is saying.
Sure. So the third thing this makes us think about in terms of what we can do today is to simplify health for the audience. So again, we're talking about a lot of types of, you know, apps in many cases, or wearables or devices, but in the future it will be sensors of all kinds, and it'll certainly go beyond just sensors alone. But one thing that consumers are being programmed to get used to is very, very simple health information. So, you know, these kinds of dashboard experiences where you can really easily understand it. I even think about Everly Well or other types of, you know, food sensitivity programs, which again, the clinical accuracy remains to be debated, but that's not what we're here to talk about. What we're here to talk about is the fact that it's such a convenient experience for the consumer to understand what it means for them. And they don't always get that in a clinical environment. In a clinical environment, it can feel very complex and very confusing. So how can we simplify health for our audience and do it in a way that is clinically accurate?
I think that is so important. And it that separately from what I was going to say before, really does speak to what Chase is talking about, because I think the legacy hospitals and health systems get so stuck in that complexity, and there's almost a refusal to try to rise above it and make things simple, because they understand the complexity and it is all important, but you're a doctor and you can't bring all that into the patient because they don't have your background. They don't have your understanding. So it makes me think of like my CPAP. So I think a lot of the companies we're talking about are really good at this. My CPAP company, which is ResMed. So what they did was, there's a lot of things when you wear a CPAP that are important. The fit of the mask, how many times you have I can't even think of the name of it, but a little episode. They track all of that, right? Your breathing. There's actually five things that they care about. But they don't tell you, here's how you do it on the five things. They've created a scale of 0 to 100. You get a score. So every night you get a score, and you wake up in the morning and on your app, you see your score for how well you did with the CPAP the night before. And it takes all the different things, five different things in this case, and rolls them into a score of 0 to 100. And as a consumer, that's all I care about. I care about, I got 100, I got 90. If I got an 80, then maybe I want to dig in and go, well, why did I get an 80? Oh, my fit wasn't great last night. It must've slid off my face or whatever, right? So this just reminds me of an idea that we had for a health system. And I'm just going to give this out. This is a great idea from an ad agency, believe it or not. But they got so stuck in the reality of the complexities, to Stephanie's point, that they couldn't see the beauty of the idea. And it was the idea of coming up with a health forecast. Imagine if a health system came up with a health forecast for its patients. Right. And the health, you just think about weather forecasts. It's sunny, it's rainy, it's partly cloudy, there's a storm coming, whatever. And that's based on, you tell us what it's based on. Is it, what combination of things is that based on? Blood pressure, glucose, pulse, history, weight. I don't know, but it's not hard to figure out how you could take maybe some essential things, some basics, put them on a table and say, let's create some kind of very simple algorithm that leads to, for the CPAP, it's a score of 0 to 100. Here, it's a health forecast. The health forecast for this month is 75 and sunny. We all know that's a good thing. Your health forecast is, you know, gloomy, cloudy, partly cloudy. There's some things we got to look at. And I think that's what you're getting at, Stephanie, in terms of it doesn't mean there can't be complexity behind that, but make this more accessible for people. And I think the people with the clinical expertise really struggle with that.
Yes, for sure. And I just want to clarify, I think, and tell me if you disagree, Chris, but I think we're not talking here about, you know, in the four walls of the hospital, how doctors talk to patients, because physicians right. do a wonderful job already of taking really, really complex information and saying, here's your diagnosis, here's your prognosis, if that's, you know, able to be shared and so on. And here's what we're going to do to treat you. We're talking about from a marketing standpoint, how do health brands attract people and get them to be a partner on a daily basis and not just go in when they have a sickness? That's what we're talking about. And so can something like this health score that you shared, Chris, could that be used, you know, on an ongoing basis to say, we'll be your partner when you're well and when you might need us, and actually we'll use it to let you know you should maybe come in for an appointment. So I just wanted to clarify, yes. like, we're not saying doctors are doing an amazing job. We're just talking about on a marketing standpoint.
We're talking about at a health management level, 100%. You're exactly right, Steffi. I'm glad you clarified that. And see, if I want to use the CPAP example again, for the 0 to 100 is perfect for me, and probably 90% of the people use the CPAP. But if I'm using that, I'm constantly coming up with 40s and 50s, and there's a problem with my sinuses, and they're going to have to go in and do some kind of sinus surgery. We're out of the ballpark of a 0 to 100 scale or a forecast or a, you know, a smiley face kind of thing. So yeah, 100%. I'm really glad you raised that. Okay. Any last closing thoughts from you two on this?
Just that I can't wait to live in this future world.
Where healthcare is complicated, self-service, and we're at the center of it. So yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and Stephanie said this a few times. Clearly, we're painting the most positive picture of this future. The mm-hmm. book goes into detail about data privacy, data security, you know, the complexity of pulling this all together. And those are all fair. But the reason why it's even in the book are there are things now like blockchain. There are breakthroughs in technology that actually make this thing possible that we're talking about. Still a lot to be worked out to get there. But you know, you got to start with the vision. Got the vision that you can figure out how to get there. So that's my positive, my positive spin. All right. Well, that was a great show. Nice job, you guys.
Yeah. Let us know out there, dear listeners, if you agree, if you disagree with this vision, if you have other ways of thinking about it, because Chris has said this before, but this is all meant to spark discussion and debate. Don't necessarily imagine that all these predictions are going to be 100% accurate, but we would love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, there's two ways you can do that. One, you can send us an email, nonormal@reviveagency.com. Give us feedback. If you've got things you want us to talk about, we're so open to doing that. The other is we have started a community on LinkedIn called the Joe Public 2030 group. So you can search for that. You can search for my name, Chris Bevelo, and then you can connect through there or just ask me about it. I'm sure you could ask Stephanie or Chase as well on LinkedIn. They'd be happy to point to you. That's where we're having ongoing conversations. And folks are dropping in all the time on that. So please come join us there. Share the podcast out with your friends, your colleagues, your neighbors, your cousins, anybody that would be interested in this kind of stuff. Make sure you give us a review and or rating on iTunes. All that is super helpful. We appreciate that. We appreciate you joining us today. We look forward to getting back with you next week. Until then, don't be satisfied with the normal. Push for the no normal. Thanks again for joining. We will talk to you next week. March. We'll talk to you in March.
Woo!
3, 2, 1.